Welcome on into the fourth and final hour of the program. Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock again. And really appreciate everybody who jumped in on the phones and on Twitter on the Falcons conversation. We'll continue that before we get out of here at C Thomas Radio or at 404-726-0929. We have not talked any college football tonight because we've been so heavily focused on the Falcons. So let's rectify that right now on the WadeFord.com hotline. Welcome in our buddy Matt Mershell, college football writer, insider for the Orlando Sentinel. Matt, let's start here. Brian Kelly is the latest high-profile coach to get dismissed. How surprised were you, and how hot is that job going to be on the market? Is it number one?
Yeah, I think it's going to be up there. I mean, I think Florida's an attractive job. But I think when you look at the overall impact of where LSU's right now, I think it moves up to number one. I was a little surprised by the move, just being the timing of the move. But I think we've seen, obviously, this is a much different college football season, and you're seeing a lot of athletic directors, a lot of boosters, a lot of donors really having a lower, patience when it comes to, wanting to see results. And they feel like they've invested a lot of money, and if you're not going to get those kind of results, you're going to have to find a way to – they're going to make a move. And I think you saw that much with Brian Kelly. And, Brian Kelly came into LSU with a lot of promise, believing that they were going to be able to win some championships, and it just hasn't materialized that way. And so, a little bit of a shock, but I think more so that it just seems to be what this coaching carousel has been over the last, 2 months here in college football.
Is there a natural fit, you think, a guy out there that could make sense for them? It seems like, although Brian Kelly had a resume, from the fake accent to a lot of the press conferences, it seemed like it wasn't a very good fit, especially at the end. Is there somebody or a couple of guys out there you think are going to be mentioned?
Well, I think obviously Lane Kiffin. Every job that opens up for the next couple of months, is Lane Kiffin's probably going to be the top name for that job. He's a guy that's been highly sought after. He's done a lot of great things, at Ole Miss. It's going to be one of the jobs that I think he's going to kind of get a lot of attention from. Again, I think you're going to probably look out some other spots. You might look at a guy like a James Franklin, from Penn State. He was ousted at Penn State. He has a really good record, and I think it would be something to take a good long look at. I think whatever move that LSU makes, they need to make sure it's the right move. They need to make sure that they get someone in who they feel like can kind of turn things around, understands the culture surrounding, LSU football, understands what's going on in the state, can recruit well, and also, realize that there's a level of success that needs to be reached, every year. And I think that's going to be the challenge for whoever takes that job. I don't think whoever gets it is going to be someone that's like a coordinator anywhere else or maybe a low G6, coach. I think it's going to be somebody who they feel like is going to be a big name that's going to strike a lot of attention, much as the Brian Kelly hire was.
You think there's any chance that throughout all this, Sark makes a move out of Texas?
I don't know. I know there was a report this weekend, that he was interested in, there was a report that, maybe he was interested in, NFL jobs, and that turned out he claimed that was false. His agents claimed it was false. I don't know. I think every coach right now is more willing to sit around and hear what's going on there. And things haven't been great this year, in Texas. Obviously they've had some challenges. Arch Manning hasn't been anywhere near as talented, or at least has played as anywhere near as much as well as they thought he was going to do this year. So, I mean, honestly, I think Sark's done an incredible job at Texas. I think it'd be a shame for him to see him leave there. I'm not sure what job would really entice them to move there. Texas has money. They have resources. They're in the SEC. I mean, I don't know if a move to like LSU, for instance, really, that seems more like a lateral move to me. And I don't necessarily know if that would provide success. I think Texas is a good move for him to stick around, as long as the Texas fan base and the Texas administration wants him.
What about things at Alabama? Are you surprised they've turned around to this extent?
No, not so much. I mean, I think the one loss, listen, I get it. Alabama fans are they have a certain level of acceptance. They believe that they should be a certain level when it comes to success. And, to open the season up with that loss to Florida State, it was a huge blow for them. And I think a lot of people, were just ready to jump on Kalen DeBoer and say, listen, this isn't the guy. We need to fire him. We need to make a change. We need to bring in someone else. And every time a fan base says that, I always bring up the thing is, well, who would you hire then? You know what I mean? I mean, who do you think is going to be there? You know, Nick Saban's not walking through that door again, you know, to be your head coach. So I think Kalen DeBoer was smart. I think he came back. He kind of saw where they needed to make some improvements. They made those improvements. You saw how they've gotten better, much better on the defensive side of the football. They're playing better. And I think you've seen that translate into the number of wins they've got. Now, he's still got a big job ahead of him. I mean, this isn't like this is over. Obviously, getting to an SEC championship would be huge for them. It would open the door for a spot in the college football playoff as well. So, I mean, if they take care of business, you know, over the next, you know, 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, you know, I think they have an opportunity to do that. And I think then fans will maybe kind of quiet down a little bit and then, you know, eventually see what happens over the next couple of years.
We're talking all things college football with our buddy Matt Mershell. Make sure you check out his work in the Orlando Sentinel. Are you surprised that Georgia Tech's gotten to this point, and what's your confidence level in them to run the table leading up into what should be an epic Georgia Tech match?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would say surprised. I mean, I think they've done a good job. I mean, if you look at their schedule wasn't the toughest going into the season. You know, obviously Clemson was believed to be, you know, one of their better games. And they took care of business when it came to that, you know, and they've been in some close games. I think that's going to help them down the road, you know, being in those close games, the game against Wake, the game against Clemson, you know, the game against Colorado, you know, those kind of close wins, I think will probably help them out, you know, long-term. You know, listen, it's up to them now. You know, they've got 4 games in the remaining schedule. You know, NC State should be a game they should be able to handle. Same thing at Boston College, same thing at Pitt. That Georgia game at the end, that's really kind of where you're looking at things. But if they get past Pitt and they go undefeated, they're going to be in the ACC championship, and then you're going to end up playing, you know, maybe someone else like a Miami or something like that. So I think this opens the door, you know, really well. I thought Brett Key's done an amazing job there. I mean, here's a guy who came in, you know, he was on the staff, was promoted to be head coach, and now to take this program where they're at. And, you know, I mean, if they could finish with an ACC championship, I think it would go far for helping, you know, kind of establish where Georgia Tech is and the grand scheme of things in the ACC.
I can't remember the last time it was this late in the season, and I really didn't have a good answer to this question. Who's the Heisman front runner?
That's a good one. I think, you know, it's one of those jobs, I think, that you could probably throw it at a lot of different guys. You know, I think Alabama quarterback Ty Simpson is a guy that I would look at. He's a guy that's had some good success. You know, it seems to be quarterbacks at this point. You know, you look at Notre Dame, you know, Chris Carr, you know, as the quarterback at Notre Dame. I think he's the guy who get a lot of, you know, you've also got, you know, a couple other players that I hate to say this, one escape my name. The Ohio State quarterback, would be a guy that I would definitely, you know, consider being as a Heisman as well. And I think, you know, it's one of those positions where Julian's saying it's one of those positions where I think we won't know who the Heisman frontrunner is going to be until we probably get to the final week of the season. And that's the way it should be. I mean, listen, you know, you shouldn't be voting for the Heisman guy right now going in the first week of November. You should be waiting until the end of the conference championships if you can help it, because that's really when you get a chance to kind of see where some of these guys can really kind of separate themselves.
If Indiana runs the table, you think Fernando Mendoza has a chance?
Yeah. Most definitely. I think that, you know, he's another one that you look at the success that they've had. I think that's huge for them. You know, and then that's where a lot of this award falls too, is that if you can have success and help lead your team to, you know, conference championship, you can lead your undefeated season, getting into the college football playoff, I think that's going to do well to kind of put you up there. But you're right about what you said earlier about the fact that this is one of those years where we just haven't had 2 or 3 front runners, you know, someone that you would really go, okay, that guy's really doing well. Travis Hunter last year was kind of in the lead and really never kind of let up, but we just don't have that this year. I think it's just because there's been a lot of parity in college football, and I think you see a lot of these teams kind of battling it out.
Before I let you go, is this finally the season for Texas A&M to break through?
I think this is the best chance they've had in a long time. I think, you know, Mike Elko is one of those guys that's done a great job, you know, coaching, you know, at A&M. I think the challenge for them is going to be, okay, you know, you look at your schedule, you know, they've got Texas at the end of the year. I think they should be able to handle Texas. They can finish undefeated. You get into an SEC championship game. Is it going to be in Alabama? Is it going to be Georgia? You know, can you get past that? That's the biggest hurdle. If you can win the SEC, you know, now seems to be the time right now to be able to do that. You know what I mean? They face some decent talent, you know, obviously LSU, Missouri, and Notre Dame, you know, but, you know, this gives them their best chance. They got to find a way to kind of to put the foot on the pedal towards the end, because this is a good A&M team, and I think this is the first time in a while that A&M fans can really be excited about what's happened.
Matt, appreciate the time as always. We'll chat soon.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you.
All right, Matt Mershell there, college football writer and insider for the Orlando Sentinel, one of my favorite guys to chop up some college football with. Speaking of my favorites, Joe Patrick. Oh, man. What does he think about what happened on Sunday? You'll hear his opinion next. You don't want to miss that. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. We have much more of a melancholy feel with this one today as we bring in our Falcons insider, Joe Patrick, on the WadeFord.com hotline. It's Chris Thomas tonight. Joe, here's where we're going to start. Going to ask a question, simple question, and you can take it whatever direction you want. What happened on Sunday?
Oh, man, yeah, what did happen on Sunday? You know, it's honestly tough for me to put this into words. I mean, I was actually talking to some friends about this, and I told our friend Knox Bardeen, who's in charge of our digital content, this, that, you know, when I did my post-game show of Joe Patrick on football from the field down there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, I was a little flabbergasted. I didn't know exactly how to encapsulate what that was, what that game was, because there was just nothing that worked for this Falcons team. And that, for that reason, I said it was, you know, there's been some debate about whether it was worse loss than Carolina Panthers. To me, there was no question it was the worst loss. And to me, it's the worst loss of that the franchise has had in years. And in terms of like a devastating loss, I just kind of threw out there, like, really since they've kind of been on this playoffless drought, and it probably actually extends back further than that, just in terms of, like, I think the amount of disgust that fans felt having watched that and then having left many of them in the third quarter. And I was sitting there in that fourth quarter thinking to myself, this feels like a preseason game right now. It feels like a preseason game. I'm watching the backups kind of finish this thing out. Nobody's really paying attention, you know, in the stands that were not very full at that point in time. And it was a sad state considering that this team is still, you know, in the middle of its season. Yes, they obviously dropped a 3-4, which is never where you want to be. And the deck is obviously stacked against them, but you know, you still have a chip and a chair, to borrow like a poker term. So, you know, it shouldn't feel that bad, but it just was for a lot of Falcons fans. And so, you know, I don't know exactly how you can encapsulate that in, you know, a certain amount of words that's easily digestible, but it was one of those days, Chris, that just felt like so, you know, damaging from a perspective of Raheem Morris's tenure, Terry Fontenot's tenure. You know, certain players, Kirk Cousins obviously took a lot of damage to kind of his, you know, potential of what could happen with him this season and maybe even beyond in his career. It was just that kind of catastrophic day for the Falcons.
Has the offense been exposed?
Yeah. I mean, I think it has. And I think that, you know, they really need to kind of, I don't know if going back to the drawing board is the right word, but I'm thinking back to, you remember last year, it was actually after Zach Robinson's first game, you know, when they scored 10 points against the Steelers in that opener, and then I believe it was 10, and then they kind of had a different looking offense that next week when they went into a Monday Night Football game against the Philadelphia Eagles, which they ultimately won in dramatic fashion. And I feel like it's time for the team to kind of, you know, go back to some like very fundamental stuff. I remember when they were having that last minute drive against the Eagles in that game, Peyton Manning on the Manning cast was saying, you know, this is where Kirk Cousins is comfortable because now you're just in a hurry up. You're running, you know, first day install type of stuff that, you know, like the back of your hand. And it feels like, you know, get rid of all the window dressing stuff that they've been doing. Go back to the things that, you know, work and have worked in the past, you know, mesh. You know, like one of the most basic plays, but we've seen Bijan Robinson able to be a weapon, you know, on those rail routes from the backfield, and it gives the quarterback some simple reads. You know, go back to some of the bread and butter stuff that you know you can do. If that requires getting under center, then I think that they should definitely do that. And I think part of it, Chris, too, is like, you know, when we talk about the defense getting found out, I think like they need to have some misdirection in the offense, because it feels to me like when they're handing the ball off to Bijan Robinson, we all know how dangerous he can be and how explosive he can be if he gets a gap. But it seems to me like defenses are just crashing down on him with abandon. And obviously, when you're down Drake London and teams can just not really respect your receivers like they were on Sunday, they have the luxury to do that. But I also feel like just from an offensive design standpoint, when you're running out of the pistol, and I know that on broadcast they've kind of mentioned this, as you know, from Zach Robinson in the production meeting, saying it's kind of a benefit of you get the ball into Bijan Robinson's hands earlier in the run that allows him to better see the gaps. But I don't know. I feel like that allows defenses to just really collapse on the play, knowing that he's got the ball earlier on. And, you know, it feels like those weak side defensive edges are coming down and slamming the door shut on some of the what would otherwise be cutback lanes. And so I think that they kind of need to go back to the drawing board and just refine some things and making sure they're not tipping their pitches on certain plays with the way that they do motions and stuff. So I think there's a lot for Zach Robinson to try to go back and look and see how this team can improve.
I know you and I didn't do this because I asked you about it ad nauseum during the offseason. The wide receiver room, it just feels like it's not good enough, Joe. And you got to go back to the offseason and figure, why didn't they try to bring in another established receiver? And then even a guy like Tyler Lockett, who was out there on the float for nothing, the Raiders picked him up. Why not try to take a swing at him? It just seems like the wide receiver room, and again, going back to our conversations in the offseason, we projected this could be an issue.
Well, yeah, and I mean, I think the receiver room looks a lot more dangerous when you have Drake London and, I would say, Ray-Ray McCloud on the field. Like, he was a big-time weapon for this offense last year, and, you know, whatever happened there, it's hurting the Falcons on the field because they could really use someone that has his kinds of talents. I've heard, you know, some of these receivers, like, and Tyler Lockett's one I just really don't think would be a game changer for this team, because I think what they really need, teams are running man coverage against these receivers, and they need someone who can really separate. I'm not sure if Tyler Lockett is that guy at this stage of his career, but that's not to say that there aren't potentially players out there that can help them do that. But what you saw in this game against the Dolphins was them just, you know, getting out on their routes, and just with a guy, like, there's a man in each of their hip pockets, and they're just not really able to separate that much. And, you know, it's especially, it hurts even more, I think, to have a quarterback in Michael Penix, who we knew going into the season, like, his accuracy is not necessarily his strong suit. So you're just not going to have the consistency when you're getting some tighter coverage to be able to make plays down in, down out. And, you know, hey, Drake London also, you know, just, he showed his value to this team on Sunday by virtue of not being available for the team. And you just seeing the difference in what that makes for this passing offense. It's obviously reflective in the stats as well, but I just thought that you really saw it. And I think, Chris, if I'm to kind of read into it, I feel like the Falcons missed his emotion out there. You know, I always think about, like, Drake London, he doesn't play football. He fights football. Like, when he's out on the field, he has this kind of fighter's mentality of, like, kind of almost losing his mind, seeing red, and just, you know, going out there. I'm not saying that he's not focused on what he's got to do. He obviously is. But he just brings an energy to that offense that I felt like was not there. And obviously you need plays to kind of help build that energy throughout a game, but they just missed him in so many different ways. And he's obviously now all the more important now that they don't have Ray-Ray McCloud involved in that room.
Talking all things Falcons with our insider, Joe Patrick. Make sure you check out his pod, Joe Patrick on Football. I think it also needs to be stated that for the last couple of weeks, you've been missing two really key impact rookie defenders in Bowman and Jalen Walker, who haven't been
able, huge.
Yeah, and they haven't been able to go. And then you have to put J.D. Bertrand in there, and you put those three things together, and it kind of was a nightmare.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, I almost feel bad for J.D. because Divine Diablo has turned out to be such an important piece. Even before he got hurt, every Falcons fan knew the kind of value and unique value, really, that he brought to this defense. And credit to, you know, the Falcons staff, whether that's Raheem Morris, Jeff Ulbrich, I believe, who kind of, he was more his guy. He talked about like liking him coming out of the draft and kind of, and being able to utilize those types of linebackers. And that's why I kind of feel bad for JD, because it's like he was not brought in specifically to play that role and be that guy. And he's being asked to, and, you know, Raheem Morris said it yesterday. He just, you know, wasn't good enough from him. And that really hurt the Falcons on defense. But I'm glad that you brought up, especially Jalen Walker. I mean, I feel like for a first round pick, it kind of hasn't really been talked about much. The fact that he's, you know, missed these last couple of games, because he has been so good and so important for the Falcons defense, especially in the run game. Like, the run defense with him is different for this team. And James Pierce Jr. can get after the quarterback, but if you're giving up the chunk running yards, you're not really getting in position for the defense to kind of pin their ears back and do what James Pierce Jr. does best. And so that's where I felt like the Falcons kind of got themselves into, was that they were just never able to get the game state in a way that allowed them to be effective earlier this season.
All right. Raheem Morris spoke yesterday. He said a lot of things. I also thought he didn't say a lot of things, but I get it. At this point during the season, when you lose that badly, you're going to be guarded. You're going to try to not give away anything that you could potentially be doing. But one thing they're not doing, at least now, is making any coaching changes. What did you make of the announcement, and are you surprised that nothing is going to happen seemingly after this loss in terms of even a figurehead, so to speak, having to pay a costly price for a performance like that?
Yeah, no, I'm not surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised because there's not an obvious, you know, staff member that could come in and pick up, you know, where Zach Robinson would have, you know, left off if they had elected to make that move. I think that this is basically the ship that Zach Robinson is steering at this point, and it's on him to, you know, turn it around and make sure it's an improved performance. But, you know, there are like some play, like, you know, TJ Yates has called plays in preseason. There's Ken Zampezi, who's a senior offensive assistant, that's called plays for a year, but that was like back in 2016. There's a different system, you know. It really, Zach Robinson is the one who's going to need to be calling the plays. So I'm not surprised. What I am surprised about, Chris, from that press conference was that I just expected to hear Raheem Morris kind of take a little bit more accountability in saying that, you know, that result was a lot on him, you know, and just trying to take the pressure off of his players a little bit. But what I heard, Chris, was him kind of saying it was on the offensive line, that they didn't play well enough, which is of course true. Like, there's no denying that, but I just figured that the head coach would want to try to take, you know, the brunt of that fire and ire that Falcons fans have right now off of them and put it on himself, even if he didn't, you know, think that that's necessarily why they lost that football game. I even asked him specifically, you know, do you feel like you prepared the team well enough in practice and gave them a game plan that gave them a chance to win? And I expected him to take that question, to take the opportunity to say, no, we could have done better, we can all do better. But he actually said, I do. That was the first words he responded with. And then the last words he responded with was that they out-Atlanted us. And I know that that's something that Falcons fans are sick of hearing now after a couple of bad losses.
All right. What do you think the main thing is this team needs to do better in order to get a tough win on the road against the hottest team in football in the New England Patriots?
Well, they do have to play better up front. So the point that Raheem Morris was making in the press conference, he's absolutely right, like I said. You know, they do have to, you know, they have to block better. They have, but again, it's about like tipping your pitches as well. And like the tight ends and receivers play a role in this when they're in certain motions, and just like the way that they do the little things can make all the difference that set you up for success, so that you can block these fronts better. But they've obviously got to get that part of their game going again, because, you know, they could very well be in a similar situation. And I certainly think that the New England Patriots are going to play man coverage against them and, you know, and dare them to see if they can run the football against a crowded front. And so I think that, you know, they've just got to be better in that way. And then also when they do pass the football, again, playing better up front, they've got to be able to deal better with some of the twists and stunts that teams are sending at them. I think that it's been kind of identified by oppositions that, you know, Ryan Neuzel and Matthew Bergeron specifically are maybe not the best at organizing, the pass offs that you have of pass rushers in some of those situations. And certainly you would have to keep your quarterback clean. Hopefully that quarterback is Michael Penix. I think that's what the coaching staff expects at this point. And it will be interesting to see how he responds, having not played a part in this really terrible result on Sunday.
Real quick, before I let you go, what's the latest on Penix?
You know, we'll get more information tomorrow. That's when Raheem really gives his main injury update. He really didn't, you know, there was nothing other than he'd say he's like continues to be day to day. But, you know, the last we heard of as of Sunday was that, you know, they expected him to be able to play against New England. They even said that, you know, if it was like a playoff game situation, like it's not like he couldn't walk or anything. I noticed him like walking without a limp and, you know, throwing a football around and stuff during practice last week. So I would expect him to be ready to play because I think he does give them the best chance to win.
Joe, appreciate it as always. We'll check out Joe Patrick on football. Hopefully this time next week, we're talking about them pulling off another impressive win rather than this game or the Carolina one. My goodness.
Hey, they could very well do it. They could very well do it. I wouldn't.
That's the most frustrating part, my friend, is that they can do it.
Exactly. Yep.
All right, Joe. We'll talk next week. That is our good buddy there, Joe Patrick. When we get back, we will get to the producer six-pack, long-awaited, but y'all had something to say tonight on the phones at 404-726-0929. If you weren't able to get in on the Falcons and you'd like to now, we'll take a couple more of your calls, and then we'll do a producer six-pack to get out of Dodge on a busy, busy Tuesday night here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Chris Thomas tonight. Last chance for romance here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's Chris Thomas tonight, Turtle, with you weeknights 6 to 10 p.m. here on 92.9 The Game. I'm going to get to a producer six-pack here with Big O to close out the show. Originally had it scheduled for much earlier in the program, but again, big ups to everybody who called tonight. We took, I think, the most phone calls I've ever taken on a single show tonight.
People wanted to talk.
Yeah, man, I love the passion. I love the enthusiasm. Listen, we all want the same thing. We want this team to get it together, man.
Get it right.
Get it right. You know the lyric.
Yes.
That's what we want the Atlanta Falcons to do, man. And they got a shot to do it against a really good team this weekend and get us back on the right side of this roller coaster, which has just been up and down and up and
down.
Do
we find out more about this Falcons team if they lose rather than they win?
Yes. Yes. Because if they win, here's the thing. And actually, Oren, it's so funny you said that. We're going to talk about that exact thing tomorrow night.
Oh, wow.
Because my question that I'm going to ask Falcons fans tomorrow is, does a win over the Patriots on Sunday even bring you back? So it's so funny you bring that up. Because I've been planning out these topics for the week. And that is the one that I said, you know what? We should talk about that tomorrow.
By the way, folks, there was no
communication about that whatsoever.
I literally just asked him that right now.
Yeah, so that goes to show you, Oren and I, on the same page. Let's see if we're on the same page with the six-pack, shall we?
All righty, sir. Let's go to question number one here. Right now, we are at, it's 9:42, October 28th, 2025. Right now, in this moment, does Wemby have an argument for being the NBA's best player?
Oh, sure. He just needs to do it over a consistent period of time. That's all. We all see all the tools are there. I mean, he is,
he's unreal, man.
His size, like, just is so overwhelming on a court filled with humongous human beings that it's really just a spectacle to watch. Like, he makes guys that are 6 foot 7 inches tall, which is almost a foot taller than I am.
It's pretty tall in the NBA, yeah.
Look diminutive. Like, his hands, his arm, like, when he releases at the top of his shot,
good luck.
He's 10 feet off the ground.
The best thing about that is watching when he shot fakes and everybody goes for it, because at any given, you're not going to block his shot.
No, it's
whether
impossible.
Whether he shot fake or,
no, it's
whether
impossible.
He shot fakes or not, you're not going to block it. So just stay on your feet.
No, they just do a collective jumping jack in the
basically,
air. That's,
yeah.
That's what they try to do.
And even if you do time it to where you're able to jump as soon as he shoots it, you're still not going to block his shot.
No, it's literally impossible. So if he gets to the point where he can have that, like, He needs to get in the lab and get one of those like Kobe Bryant type off seasons where you literally just repeat your shot 10,000 times over the course of a summer. He'll be as unstoppable as any player to ever play the game.
First player since Shaq, I think they said in 2001, that opened up the season in every game, had at least 30 points and 15 rebounds.
He's just unstoppable. I mean, again,
for win a game where he had the 9 blocks, just yeah.
Here's how we'll answer this one, and then we'll move on. He's going to be as good as he wants to be. However much effort he's willing to put in, in each offseason to perfect his craft is equally on a vertical uptick to how amazing and how legendary his career will be. That's it. It's Wemby, how insanely good do you want to be, sir?
That's where you can take yourself, so to speak. All right, question number two. Lamar Jackson practicing full today. He did the limited last week but did not play. Tyler Huntley got the start.
Soup.
Full participant today in practice. He talked about the message that Jim Harbaugh has given to the team going forward. Excuse me, John Harbaugh, not Jim. John Harbaugh has given to the team going forward, where it's every game is basically do or die. They can't afford
when
to
you're
have
2-5. Yeah. It literally is.
They can't afford to mess around. They can't afford to, as Randy would say, they can't trick one off. Do they make
otherwise the they'll be walking their damn hamsters.
There you go, touching grass. Do you think they make the playoffs this year?
No. I think it can be close. We talked about that with Christopher Price earlier in the show. If you missed the interview, just search Chris Thomas Tonight wherever you get your podcast. Nah, there's too many good teams in the AFC. You got the Chiefs and the Broncos in the West. You got the Bills and the Patriots in the East. You got the Steelers and... do we want to count Cincy in the North?
I think you just want to go with the Steelers right now. But even saying that, like, they won the division,
then the South,
but it's shaky.
You have Indy, and don't look now, but Houston.
Houston's turning it on right now, too, yeah.
So I just think there's too many teams ahead of them right now.
Okay, question number three. We did not get too much into, or we didn't do the Falcons true-false questions, so I'm going to ask a couple of those real quick. Does JD Bertrand get his snaps cut at least in half before Sunday? Excuse me, during Sunday's Pats game?
By who? Is Troy Anderson coming back?
A combination of what Ronnie Harrison and DeMarco Hellums. You find a way with those guys, and there were moments, Chris. They posted some videos on Twitter, and I joke with Dukes and Bell about we do our pre-show behind the curtain, and there was a moment yesterday where Day-Day's computer froze. You could still hear him, but it froze. The image froze. That's exactly what it looked like on Sunday with J.D. Bertrand a couple times.
Which is so weird, because when he played last year, Orin, he wasn't this bad.
It was downhill. He was moving. But now that you're asking him, I guess, to expand what his responsibilities on the defensive end.
So he's essentially Nate Landman.
There's a second and a half where he does not move. Everyone else is moving, and he's just still. He's just in his stance. And then once the ball maybe gets close to him, or he diagnoses this thing, or maybe, well, I wouldn't say diagnosis. He maybe diagnoses what's going on, but that didn't usually work out well.
No, that's when his quick twitch muscles kicked in 2 seconds too late, which is an eternity in the NFL.
There was one play where Devon Achane was his own play, and you see all the Falcons trying to rally the football, and then you see JD just freeze, and then he makes his way to the football.
I guess it's going to have to be by committee, like you said. A couple of guys that they just brought in, Ronnie Harrison, et cetera, bring DeMarco Hellums down, maybe see if he can do it, but not good. Again, I didn't realize Divine Diablo was essentially the Jenga piece holding up the entire defense.
He is what Divine was to this defense, what Haynes King is to Georgia Tech. He was the most indispensable piece that you could not afford to lose.
Which is insane to think about going into the season.
Yes. Question number four. What is the percent chance the Falcons finish third in the NFC South this year?
Not zero. Not zero. I'll tell you that. Carolina, look, they lost bad last week. They didn't have their quarterback. Bryce Young started playing a lot better. What if Carolina sweeps the Falcons this year? You have any doubt that that can happen? Absolutely not. Oren, it is not nothing. It's, I don't know, 25, 35%, which if you told me that at the start of the season, I would have been like, you need to walk me off the ledge. I mean, seriously, like that is astronomically high compared to where it should be. It should be 2%. If you look at the state of the Carolina Panthers right now, there's a decent chance that they sweep them. And, Oren, I hate to say this, but, okay, the New Orleans Saints just made a quarterback change. We didn't talk about it today. Tyler Shuck is now their quarterback.
He's the dude.
You know what the Falcons have on Tyler Shuck?
Not a lot of footage.
Nothing. So they have no idea what they're going to expect when they play him. They'll have like a game or two of tape on this kid. So they're going to have essentially nothing. So you're telling me there's not a chance he can go around and run around like he did at Louisville and just hit Chris Olave deep a couple of times?
I hope not.
And this offense sputters the way that it did the last 2 weeks? Oh,
I hope not.
Oh, baby. Sorry. That's where we are right now, folks.
Oh, no.
Sorry.
Let's move on to our fun questions here. This first one, though, not as fun. There was an incident today. I think it was in Mississippi. There was a truck that was transporting monkeys.
Monkeys?
Monkeys.
To a zoo?
They were coming from some lab.
A monkey?
These monkeys reportedly were testing positive for herpes.
Okay.
COVID.
Oh, boy.
Hepatitis.
Oh, God.
A lot of fun stuff, yes.
Wow.
So it looks like maybe one or two maybe got it, but they were in cages. The ones that survived the crash remained in their cages. But made me think of the wife and I. I'd never seen 28 Days Later.
All of them are good.
Just sort of passed me by. But we watched that on Sunday, and it starts off with a monkey bite in a cage. Some liberators are trying to set monkeys free.
Sets off an apocalyptic event.
Very quickly. What is your favorite movie about an outbreak?
Oh, that's a good one. I mean, it's got to be Alien, right? The original? One of the 10 most famous scenes in a movie? I think it's up there, right? The alien bursting out of the stomach. I mean, it's got to be.
At that time, it was like, oh my God.
Yeah, like you get that, The Exorcist when she turns her head around. The Godfather, you know, the day of my daughter's wedding. I mean, it's up there with the all-time most iconic scenes in movies. So I think I'm going to have to go the OG Alien.
OG Alien.
One of the great movies of all time.
And finally, our normal last question of Producer Sixpack here. What you got going on this weekend?
Yeah, man. I got an open weekend. We're airing some college football programming, so I have a nice long weekend. My girl is getting her car back. So I'm excited. Hopefully we'll do a little bit of traveling. I think we're going to hit our favorite fuss spot. We haven't been there in a while. It's actually a Dragon Ball themed restaurant, which is awesome. And they serve pho and really, really good Vietnamese food. So I think we're going to hit that. And I am excited because we haven't been there in quite a while. All right, great job. That'll be the producer six pack for tonight. Again, just want to shout out everybody who called in tonight. Y'all were so awesome. We talked for the entire show about this Falcons team, and you bet your bottom dollar we'll continue to do just that tomorrow. Thanks to all my guests as well. If you couldn't get through on the phones, hit me up on Twitter @CThomasRadio. I will talk to y'all tomorrow.